Chapter 32. The brass plaque on the red door in Peckender Street glittered as it reflected the yellow light of a street lamp. It glared for a moment as it reflected the violent flashing light of a passing police car sweeping by. It dimmed slightly as a pale, pale wraith slipped silently through it. It glimmered as it dimmed because the wraith was trembling with such terrible agitation. In the dark hallway, the ghost of Gordon Way paused. He needed something to lean on for support, and of course there was nothing. He tried to get a grip on himself, but there was nothing to get a grip on. He retched at the horror of what he had seen, but there was, of course, nothing in his stomach. He half stumbled, half swam up the stairs like a drowning man trying to grapple for a grip on the water. He staggered through the wall, through the desk, through the door, and tried to compose and settle himself in front of the desk in Dirk's office. If anyone had happened into the office a few minutes later, a night cleaner perhaps, if Dirk Gently had ever employed one, which he didn't on the grounds that they wished to be paid and he didn't wish to pay them, or a burglar perhaps, if there had been anything in the office worth burgling, which there wasn't, they would have seen the following sight and been amazed by it. The receiver of the large red telephone on the desk suddenly rocked and tumbled off its rest onto the desktop. A dialing tone started to burr. Then one by one, seven of the large, easily pushed buttons depressed themselves, and after the very long pause which the British telephone system allows you within which to gather your thoughts and forget who it is you're phoning, the sound of a phone ringing at the other end of the line could be heard. After a couple of rings, there was a click, a whir, and a sound as of a machine drawing breath. Then a voice started to say, "Hello, this is Susan. I can't come to the phone right at the moment because I'm trying to get an E-flat right, but if you'd like to leave your name..." So then, on the say-so of an, I can hardly bring myself to utter the words, electric monk, said Dirk, in a voice ringing with derision, "you attempt to launch the ship, and to your utter astonishment, it explodes. Since when?" "Since when," said the ghost abjectly, "I have been alone on this planet. Alone with the knowledge of what I had done to my fellows on the ship. All alone." "Yes, skip that," I said, said Dirk angrily. "What about the main ship? That presumably went on and continued its search for..." "No." "Then what happened to it?" "Nothing. It's still there." "Still there?" Dirk leapt to his feet and whirled off to pace the room, his brow furiously furrowed. "Yes." Michael's head drooped a little, but he looked up piteously at Reg and at Richard. "All of us were aboard the landing craft. At first I felt myself to be haunted by the ghosts of the rest, but it was only in my imagination. For millions of years, and then billions, I stalked the mud utterly alone. It is impossible for you to conceive of even the tiniest part of the torment of such eternity." "Then," he added, "just recently life arose on the planet. Life, vegetation, things in the sea. Then at last you, intelligent life, I turn to you to release me from the torment I have endured." Michael's head sank abjectly onto his chest for some seconds. Then slowly, wobblingly, it rose and stared at them again with yet darker fires in his eyes.